At this point, perhaps the most helpful thing that I could do is show you a few theories that wanted to cover everything, that were proposed an ontology. How does it all hang together? So that you get the idea of what I'm talking about. No doubt you've not heard any of this stuff before, so you need some examples. So I'm going to leave this list over here, and I'm going to start with the theories of Pythagoras and his followers. They not only did mathematics, if you remember from school, studying the Pythagorean theorem and other things such as that in geometry, but they had an ontology. And they recognized at the same time that what they regarded as generating everything else was also divine. It won't surprise you, maybe it will, to hear that what they said this was is numbers. Everything is made of numbers. So whereas you and I might think more of atomic theory, you think everything is made up of atoms, for Pythagoras and his followers, it was not. It was numbers. Things are clusters of numbers. And numbers combine this way and that way to form different things, but the numbers themselves are self-existent and generate everything else. So they not only did mathematics as a commune, they prayed to numbers. They worshipped them. Almost nobody does that anymore, but there's still people who think that the mathematical is that on which everything else depends, and that's what they held. So to use the metaphor I started with of the necklace and the string and the beads, their claim is, this isn't just one bead on the necklace, this is the string. Everything else is held together because numbers combine in different ways such as to produce things that have these other different characteristics. So it's what hangs everything together. And mathematical truth is therefore the most fundamental truth that there is. It's eternal, it's uncreated, it's changeless, it generates the world of change in which we live, but it's the explanation of everything in the world in which we live. That's an ontology, that's a theory of reality, that's hanging everything together. That's not the only one. Here's another one. I already gave you Thales, so why don't we take Plato? This is a little more complex, but you will see why it's an example of what we've been talking about. Plato looks around the world and says there's a lot of things that are puzzling about this world. I mean, really puzzling. For one thing, every object that we see is only in one place at one time. Each object is distinct from any other object, but then they have qualities that are the same. This chair isn't that chair, but they're both blue. Blue, then, isn't like an object. Blue can be many places at once. And he calls terms that apply to many things at once universals. How is this universal knowledge possible? That's what he asks himself. And he comes up with a theory. His theory is, you ready for this? There's another realm of reality, and in the other realm of reality is the perfect blueness, and all the blue things in the world in which we live are imperfect copies of it. So that's why trees are the way they are, because there's the perfect tree in his other world, and all the trees that we see are imperfect copies. The model for this, I mean, it grows out of concerns in mathematics, especially geometry. We have an idea of a perfect circle, but there's no such thing in this world. Where did we get that idea? We have an idea of a perfectly straight line, but no matter how you try to draw one under enough magnification, it's not perfectly straight, it's irregular and jagged. So where did we get the idea? Well, it's because, says Plato, where our minds are in touch with this other dimension of reality that's got all the perfections in it. There's not only the perfect green and the perfect what it is to be a tree and perfect what it is to be a horse. There are also perfect lines and points. There are all the numbers are in the other world. So he absorbs, he takes in part of what Pythagoras was saying. The mathematical is the does constitute the fundamental law order of the universe, but it's only one of a lot of things in this other world. There are also other kinds of perfections. And that's why we also have the idea of perfect justice or goodness. Those are things that make something better to have them than not have them. And we see imperfect instances of those in this world. The perfection is in the other world. So for Plato, there are two ways to explain what's going on in the world. There is the material things are made of. That's what Thales was worried about. What kind of stuff is that? And then there are the perfections in the other world, and the perfections control how the matter gets shaped into things in this world. It's a lot more complicated. And Plato now has two beads, not one. Perfections, including mathematical laws, but not limited to them, as Pythagoras had it, and matter. And matter would just be chaos without the order imposed on it from the world of perfections. Some later Christians thought that sounded a lot like heaven, and they identified heaven with the perfections and read the perfections into God. I'm going to argue that that was a serious mistake. Scripture doesn't ever speak of God as all and only perfections, or even say anything about perfection when speaking of God. But that's another story for another day, and we will get there in this course. So here are a few illustrations. We have Thales saying things are made of matter. What kind of matter? Well, maybe it's water that's the most basic form of matter. And as you may remember, if some of you have read this, the Greeks had other theories. He said water, others said earth, air, or fire. And finally, when we get to 500 BC, Democritus and Leucippus propose, no, it's none of those. It's little things called atoms. And how the atoms combine makes earth, air, fire, or water. So that theory goes all the way back to 500 years before Christ. I wish I could hear your questions. But these examples ought to show how people come over here and what they pick out and what they don't. They pick out the mathematical or the physical. They want matter to be of a certain kind. The laws could be quantitative, having to do with mathematics. Aristotle, Plato's great student, proposed a theory of reality which was different. It was matter, and you might call them perfections, but he thought the main characteristic of them was logical rather than mathematical. And rather than say they were in another realm, he said they were in each and everything. So the perfect form for what it is to be a horse is in every imperfect horse. We're not going to go into that any further. You might be relieved to hear that. But these are examples of picking one of the beads or two of the beads and claiming, here we have the string that tells us how all things in the widest sense of things hang together in the widest sense of hang together. And it's remarkable to me that how appropriate that quote is when the New Testament has a comment already about that. In Colossians 1, this is exactly what Paul wrote in that letter, that through Christ, all things hang together. Do you begin to get the picture? If you don't put Christ there, then you put some part of creation. You do what Paul called in Romans 1, replace the Creator with something He created. You make that what holds all things together, when in fact it's God through Christ only. That also can give you a little foretaste of the critique to come of picking any one of these, or any two, and saying this is what hangs all things together. No, it's God through Christ. So we should have a distinctive point of view. Let me give you one more example, and then we'll quit the examples for the day. These are all ancient examples, so let's take something contemporary. What's going on now? Materialism. forms today a theory of reality advocated by a lot of people. I don't know that it's certainly not a, I don't think it's a majority of philosophers, but it may be a plurality. It may be it's the largest single group, and it's a very vocal and loud group, and a group that has a lot of talent. And what they are saying is, everything is fundamentally physical. The fundamental realities we can't name. It's not atoms, we know that, because atoms are not indestructible. But there's whatever it is that is the divine basis of everything else, whatever it is that generates everything else and is itself self-existent, is something physical. We don't know what, but whatever it is, it's going to be physical. So physics is the science that's really going to hang everything together. Because all of these, the rest of these, are real, if they are real, only to the extent that they're produced by matter. So what we have at the basis of all reality, and this is their expression, is the purely physical. Whatever those things are, they might turn out to be quantum entities or something, but no one knows quite what they are, but they're sure that whatever it is that is fundamental to all reality and hangs everything else together is the purely physical. And they are perplexed most by human rationality, by what we would call minds. What are minds? Now, some of them are extreme physicists, and they say, nothing, listen to this, nothing has any characteristic except physical characteristics, and physical laws are the only laws that hold for reality. That's pretty difficult to defend, because it means that would mean that there really are no logical laws, which are the very laws by which we think and propose that theory. But others will tell us, there's the basic physical reality, and if it gets complex enough, then these other kinds of characteristics emerge or supervene on the physical, and that's what we call mind. So some of them think there are really only brains and brain processes, but what we think by using those processes is what we call mind. So the mind isn't another non-physical thing. It's different from the brain in the way that a software program is different from the computer in which you run it. The brain is the hardware, and what we call mind, the thoughts, concepts, desires, fears, hopes, they're like the program that runs in it. So the program's completely dependent on the brain. And yet others differ a little again. They say there's the brain and there's the mind, and the mind is a separate and distinct thing, even if it depends on, only arises from the brain. It has characteristics that brains don't, and it's in that experience that we find such things as logical laws or beauty or ethical right and wrong or whatever. Those are all versions. So there are many versions of the materialism, but here it is. It means what's fundamental in reality. The string, again, that hangs together all the beads. Materialism in philosophy, then, doesn't mean that somebody's interested only in accumulating wealth and objects and things. That's what we sometimes use it that way in common speech, but it's not what it means in philosophy. It means being a physicalist. It means saying what's fundamental, what hangs everything together, whatever else you're going to allow in your theory, it hangs together because of the physical, the purely physical. And we'll come to that stuff as well later in this course. And I will argue that actually the expression purely physical is meaningless. So that again is a piece of the Christian critique of the way it often gets done these days. Okay, quickly, a recap. What we've done today in this lecture, these three parts, is first of all explain what a theory is. There are our guesses that we insert into gaps of our knowledge in order to get an explanation. That happens within the sciences that are represented by all these things over here. And it happens in ontology. It happens in philosophy when we when we take one of them, we try to show why it's the cause of all the rest. It's what hangs the rest together. Then we looked at the fact that this theory-making replaced myth-making as a way of explaining. We distinguished theories that occur within any of these areas with ontologies that try to give us the big picture, how it all hangs together. And we saw some examples of them. All of this, of course, plays off of our experience, our common experience of the world around us prior to making theories. Christian philosophy is going to accept that and not try to refute it as though it's some kind of false theory. What's presented to us is the world as God made it and as we experience it. So we're going to take that part seriously. We're not going to turn around and say, for example, as some of the materialists do, well, the physical is the only real one, all the rest are illusions. And they do say that. There are people with their bare faces hanging out, they tell you that. How they can fail to die of embarrassment, I have no idea, but they do it. So we're going to also have our theory about how all things hang together. But the identity of the one who causes all things to hang together is not a theory. That's been revealed to us in God's Word as God through His Son, Jesus Christ. And only God through His Son, Jesus Christ. We'll end there for today.